Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are, and today we're going to talk with a couple of early pioneers of solar, or our alternative title. You know, I think this sun thing is not just a fad.
No, you're kidding.
No, we're not. And so we're joined with by Michelle and Jeff Greenfield. They're the owners of Third Sun Solar. Is there more to that name of the business, or is it just Third Sun?
That's it.
Oh, that's it. Okay. So Third Sun, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Hey, well, it's great to be here. We're the owners of the business, or maybe you could say the business owns us in some ways. It feels like that. But we are coming up on our 20th anniversary. Officially, it will be June 2nd. So we did some solar on our own before that, but officially the LLC says June 2000. So
that's amazing.
Gone by quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's been 20 years. But so we co-own the business, and we have, I think, 34 employees right now and based in Athens, Ohio.
Well, when I go out and teach solar training classes, I always tell people the solar industry from a consumer industry is only about 10 years old. Still a baby. So if you've been in it for 20 years, you're definitely early pioneers. So anyway, what got you interested in that? Because, I mean, that was the days when solar was really not viable economically and from a justified position. So what got you guys interested?
Well, I guess I'll start. The technical piece is a big part of it. I was playing with Legos and then wires and stuff as a kid, and solar has always fascinated me and read all about it. And Home Power Magazine was a really, really early resource, and I was reading about these crazy folks in California putting batteries and solar panels together, and there's always been a attracted to it. And when we built our house, what year was that, Michelle?
We bought our land in 95 in Athens County, rural Athens County, and there was no electric to it. So no power lines, no water, no nothing. And when we assessed the options of buying power from the power company, we were going to have to pay them extra money to bring poles in. Thousands of dollars to bring the poles to our land. And then they were going to charge us a minimum bill of like almost $200 a month for a certain amount of time to recoup the cost for them to connect us. And we just looked at each other and thought, we never use that much electricity. We've never had a bill like over $40. And so
That was the excuse that I needed to do the cool system.
So you cracked open the Legos and started at it, right?
And it's amazing. That first system that we put together was using 50-watt modules, and we had 10 of them, so 500 watts, or half kW.
Which is about a little less than two panels today.
Right? Yeah, today our average panels are 300 to 400 watts per panel, and our average residential system that our customers are installing is above 10 kW. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's 20 times the size of what we started with way back then.
Yeah, and back then we couldn't connect to the grid, so there wasn't anything called net metering, which allowed us to connect into the grid. Now, there were people around the country that were doing guerrilla solar, where they were connecting into the grid without telling anyone. Mm-hmm. The way we did it, we required to have battery banks, a battery backup, because we wanted to have power at night and we wanted to have power in the wintertime. So this very small system with a battery bank, we would shut all electricity off at night before we went to bed to make sure that nothing was draining out of the batteries, that the batteries weren't, nothing was happening to them.
It was a step above camping.
And a bigger place. The house was pretty big.
That was kind of the way you had to go solar back then. And it was definitely not going to ever be mainstream because people didn't want to be running their own power company. And so net metering, or basically utility interactive solar, was the big technological breakthrough, more of a policy breakthrough, that opened it up. And, we might or might not decide when solar has gone mainstream or if it's gone mainstream.
What was your system? I'm assuming yours was like an old 12-volt system. Was it inverted? I mean, did you use all DC appliances or did you use an inverter?
So that was, up to that point, most solar was off the grid cabins or hippies or back to the land. And that's actually some of our first customers were, hey, can you come and help me fix my battery bank or you know, fix my inverter or my charge controller. But at this point, we wanted to build the house so that it had all regular AC wiring. So it had everything that if someone ever bought our house, they could just connect right to the grid.
So that was probably fairly new concept, I would think, at that time.
Yeah.
Because before you had to have all DC and you had to buy like a DC 12-volt refrigerator and all of that crazy stuff if you wanted to be solar.
Yeah. Well, we did it. We had a trace inverter, which was a modified sine inverter. So it hummed and it made noises and some appliances didn't really like the modified sine wave.
Sure.
And it was pure sine wave inverters and more efficiency that actually, as the technology improved over the probably the 15 or in the last 20 years, that's been a huge leap.
Yeah, so our system has been kind of our test bed. And so we went from that inverter to another inverter to another inverter. We've gone through different battery banks. We've changed things. We added wind. We took the wind down. We've expanded the solar over the years. And we just now have gotten what I'm going to call my last battery pack. We put a Tesla Powerwall in, and they're really popular. And I can check it on my phone right now and see exactly what's going on back at our system, which, you know, things have come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Just boys and their toys, right?
There's a lot of techno
and girls. And girls, don't forget.
Yeah, but it doesn't
women.
Rhyme. So,
I don't
you
care.
Know, girls and their pearls. That doesn't rhyme either. Okay,
we're,
so anyway,
we're
so
firing you.
So
well,
you,
no, just
I'm digging deeper.
To help you out here, Jay. We're not an official scientific study, but we do get to talk to thousands and thousands of people, regular old homeowners who want to go solar. And often it is the woman of the house who is in the lead. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the man of the house. But at the end of the day, most households, they've got to make a joint decision together. So we are technical experts, but we're turning into marriage counselors and psychological experts. And the economics of this is a fascinating part of it. We can come back and do another deep dive into that.
The psychology of going solar. So then you guys were doing this for your own benefit, but then you somehow morphed this into an actual business. So how did that kind of happen? Did people come to you and say, hey, you're doing it. Can you do it for me? Is that kind of where
That's kind of where it happened. And at the point, we moved into our house in 1997. And so that was we built the house off the grid too, and we didn't have any electricity when we were building our house, which we did by ourselves by hand. And so 97 to 2000, we were living there. People were interested in how we were living and what it was like, and can you come fix my system? Like I said, there were cabins, there were other people that had some systems or that wanted to do this. So in 2000, Jeff made the leap and quit the job that he was in, which was he was working in affordable housing development. And a year later, he had some business. It was busy, and he needed help. And so I was doing small business development. I was counseling small businesses on how to get themselves off the ground and do their work and make money. And I thought, why am I doing this for everybody else? I could be working with Jeff.
I sure needed the help. I had a shoebox full of receipts and was busy up on the roof pulling wires and doing the technical stuff. And I was on the phone, and at the time, the internet, I guess it was the internet back then.
Dial-up.
Still dial-up in parts of this area.
So I was doing a lot of sales, but I certainly wasn't doing anything on the more business side of things. Mm-hmm. And
so I would ask, when are you going to bill those people? You were out there, last month. Where's the income? And so I made the leap following him about a year later. And left my job, and I said, I have a business background, I have a business degree, and I've run several businesses, started some things. And I said, let's do this for a year together and see if we can make it work, if we can feed the kids, which we had, at that point, we had like a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and can we pay the mortgage payment? And so that, I never went back. We just kept going.
So we didn't have a garage to start in. We didn't have a basement to start in, but we did have an attic. And that is where we started.
Mm-hmm. It's closer to the sun.
There you go. There you go.
Facing south.
Well, it sounds like you're fortunate because I think a lot of people who get into any kind of, who take an enthusiasm and make it into a business, don't have the business acumen to then make it financially a success. You know, you see, they could be very good at going out and installing systems and dealing with the tinkering and all of that, but that in the end doesn't pay the bills. So that may be a testament to why you're 20 years later.
It certainly is a testament. I think a good idea and hard work is not enough. There's definitely luck that we're gonna not say that we didn't have good timing and some good luck. But I think Michelle's more math skills, more business skills, more focus on the what I would call the boring stuff of solar business, invoicing, balancing the books, is why we're still around.
Mm-hmm. Well, from those early days, and you're talking, you were right in the transition from the 12-volt, essentially a glorified camper being transitioned, to the 12-volt systems, to now an inverter-based system that's still standalone. And then the next big leap was, as you mentioned, grid-tied with net metering that came along a little bit later, but at least you could feed back into the grid. So what kind of technology evolution have you seen personally, professionally, and all in the last, say, 20 years?
I can give a broad overview. Like I said, we had that modified sine inverter. We now see pure sine wave and grid interactive inverters, much higher efficiencies. I don't know what are the efficiencies now, Jeff?
Yeah, it's gone from below 80% to around 98%.
Yeah, so that means
the amount. And just to back up, the modified sine wave and the pure sine wave emulates the electricity you get from the electric company.
Exactly, yeah.
It's an analog type signal. If you ever see those like heartbeat type things, the sine wave. Whereas modified is a digital way of kind of trying to approximate that, but you get problems with static on things and some appliances that don't work very well.
Yeah, so that's way in the past.
And that's even if it works. I think one of the big changes in the early days was, reliability. So reliability has become, a non-issue. These things work great. Whereas in the olden days, we would advise, some people would have two inverters in case one went down. Mm-hmm. So again, the earliest pioneers, our customers, when we first started doing this, were the brave pioneers. And they were willing to sacrifice for what they believed in. They're willing to make significant, concessions and live with, a lot of the pain of being off grid, running a generator, having the lights go out, on Christmas Eve when everyone's in your house and you got to go figure out what's wrong with the system. So those days are happily behind us.
And they had some heavy duty expenses with these systems. I mean, we talk about cost per watt of electricity. So what were we looking at 20 years ago?
With a battery-based system off the grid, we were looking at, $16 a watt?
16 to 25.
Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Once we got net metering and people were able to connect to the grid without having batteries, and let me quickly explain what that is we don't need the battery bank because you have, at nighttime, you have the grid power coming into your house. And so you kind of, it's a back and forth between what you're producing with your solar, what you're using from the grid, no need for the batteries. I think about 15 years ago then, those systems cost about $9 or $10 a watt. And then today we're seeing $3 a watt. Mm-hmm. So prices have come down dramatically.
Well, we'll get back to that in a second, but I want to interrupt you to let everyone know you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke and our guests Michelle and Jeff Greenfield from Third Sun in Athens, Ohio, reminding you once again it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God, yes. And the end of electricity as we know it, right? So anyway, we're talking about some of the pricing, how it's changed. So many factors, right? So a system that would run a household at $25 a watt, if you're talking about a typical suburban household, which obviously you would not have been able to afford such a system for that, because I think typically you say your systems today run 7,000-8,000 watts, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. for a regular home-based system.
Yeah, back then there was no discussion about the economics of solar. Mm-hmm. Some folks really wanted it and couldn't afford it, or some folks really wanted it and could afford it. But it's not about, you know, economic payback or you know, some of those kinds of non-environmental decisions.
Well, and today, that's probably some of the first discussion you get into. When you go out and meet with a customer, they say, well, how long before this thing pays for itself? Which drives me nuts, because I always say, well, how long until your driveway pays for itself? You know, how long until that kitchen counter pays for itself? Is not a solar array as much of a lifestyle statement as, you know, a brick driveway, I mean, or...
or your air conditioner.
Yeah,
that, I mean, never really pays for itself.
Those
you
damn
enjoy
air conditioners.
The benefits of it.
Yeah, so it's a false thing, but it's a reality, right? We got to deal with it because... So speaking of which, how long till these things pay for themselves now?
Yeah, it's changing with the tax credit being adjusted, but right now our typical simple payback is around 10 years, 10 to 12 years, depending on the size of the system. You know, we're looking at commercial systems that can be less than that, closer to five to 10 years is the range.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your original point, you know, paying for itself. If there's no planet for our grandchildren, mm-hmm. you know, maybe we saved a little bit of money. That's a big driver. Most of our clients, even though the economics have gotten so much better, most of our clients, it's a blend. And they either want it because of the environmental attributes and then they kind of justify it with the economics, or they're attracted because of the economics, but the environmental attributes, you know, push them over the edge. And so it's still really a blend. And very rarely will we get a purely economically driven residential customer.
Unless you're talking, residential. Well, for... Because I know there are a lot of big investors out there who are using solar as a purely a way to make money.
Yeah, yeah, it's not only a way to save energy costs, but also a hedge. The volatility. We've got school districts and units of government, for example, that you know, they have budgets, and if the cost of energy goes up or goes down, or goes up and down and up and down, it's hard to predict. So the predictability of locking in your energy costs by having on-site solar is just one of the parts of the decision-making process for the non-residential clients. About half of our business are commercial and institutional clients, and about half of our business are residential folks.
Well, I know you guys have lived, you know, partially in Colorado, partially here in beautiful southeastern Ohio, as opposed to, you know, kind of dreary backwoods Colorado, right? Actually, I was born in Colorado, so I can make fun of it.
But, well, they both have their wonderful attributes. Yeah.
Yes. So, but I always think of Colorado as kind of, like California, ground zero of the solar world. And Ohio, we're still the backwaters, you know, which is good from some perspectives, because those people wanting to get into the industry are not dealing with well-established, well-entrenched businesses, except in case of Third Sun. But so what are the differences? What are your perspectives on how that has changed? What's the difference between Colorado and Ohio?
Well, first of all, Colorado and California, New Mexico, Arizona have a lot more sun than Ohio does, obviously. Mm-hmm. So when you're sizing a system, when you're designing things, you take those sun hours into perspective. So we have to do a little bit bigger of a system in Ohio than we would in Colorado for the same load or the same size house. So there's the natural effect of how much sun there is. There's also the policy effect. So in Colorado and California and Arizona, even in Illinois, I mean, other states, state by state policies differ. And that means, are there any incentives for putting in solar? Are there any tax credits for putting in solar? Are there property tax credits? What are the incentives? So in Colorado, there's a lot more incentives at the level of the government, and some utilities have incentives.
Yeah, one of the interesting things is North Carolina. That didn't make your list when you talked about solar hotbeds, but that's mm-hmm. one of the hottest solar markets in the mm-hmm. nation. That is a decidedly red state, very conservative. But the decision makers there said, hey, you know, this solar thing could be an economic boom. It could be a job creator. And so North Carolina had a state tax credit that favored solar construction. And there are thousands of solar installer jobs, designer jobs, clerical jobs, you know, all the different ways people make these projects happen. And Ohio could be doing that. Illinois is another state where, although, you know, Chicago is a pretty blue territory, the rest of the state's decidedly red. Yet the decision makers there said, hey, this is the future. We want to attract businesses to relocate to Illinois. One of the ways we're going to do that is by incentivizing everyone to go solar. And so that state, Illinois, not any more sun than Ohio, but about, you know, 100 times bigger solar market right now, and it's booming.
I know when we had the hearings up in Columbus when the state legislature was discussing solar policies, some of the arguments, and I know I made it to one to our senator, is it's not a matter of you were endorsing one technology over another. You were saying, do you want development to take place in Ohio or do you want it to take place elsewhere where there are better incentives? Because the technology will continue to grow. Whether you want it to, you don't want it to, the economics become the main driver. Where you want it to take place is really what the legislation is focusing on. So,
yeah. And we have, Ohio is, has a huge population. We have a huge number of energy users. We get most of our energy from fossil fuels. So every kilowatt that we put on the grid of solar energy offsets a kilowatt of dirty fossil fuel energy. So it's really ripe for really progress, making more progress.
Well, where do you see the industry going in the short term? And when I say short term, next 5 years, you know, we're all trying to decide who's going to be president the next 4 years. Where are we going the next 5 years?
Well, I'll go first.
Okay.
I mean, we know at the national level the policy has been pretty antagonistic toward renewables.
Recently.
I mean, prior to the current administration, it was really positive. But we have this momentum of positivity that was that came into the state and to the local governments from prior administrations that hasn't stopped. So even though the national policy is just seems just so like, no way, we don't want renewables, you go to the city level, the county level, the state level, and there are people on the ground that really want to go for renewables in the future. So that's really positive. I mean, that is that's really what we're seeing as the trend right now is that, you know, we can, if even if we don't get the federal people to tell us that we should do this, we're going to just do it anyway.
Yeah, case in point, the city of Cincinnati will soon be home to the largest municipal solar array in the nation. Pretty amazing. And people that, you know, we talk to folks all the time in other markets and they say, wow, how are you all doing that in Ohio? And we point to the mayors. If the federal government doesn't lead, the governors lead. And if the governors aren't leading, then the mayors and local policymakers are taking the lead. Athens, of course, has some, you know, cutting edge stuff that on the policy side. How I was going to answer your question is to go back to our company's mission, our purpose. So our mission is called, we've spelled it out, to accelerate the shift to clean energy. So it's very purposeful to the way we said that. And it suggests that the shift to clean energy is inevitable. It's happening no matter what. It's obvious. We had a shift from burning trees to burning fossil fuels, and now the shift is from burning fossil fuels to harvesting solar energy directly. Now, the big question is how quickly will we be making that inevitable transition? And so our goal is to accelerate that.
I always like to think of the quote from Gandhi when he said, you know, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they attack you, and then you win. You know, I mean, this is the process. And we're just now a little bit in the attack mode because it's real money. It's real. It's a real threat to the established fossil fuel industry. And, you know, but it is, as you say, I mean, I agree. And we're sitting here very wise around this table saying, yes, yes, it is inevitable. So we are in the age of renewable. So when we talk about the age of renewable, though, looking further out, I mean, in the Lego world of technology, what are the cool things that you see on the horizon?
Yeah, you know, a lot of folks are deciding whether or not to go solar, and they're trying to think, of timing it. Is there a magic technology silver bullet that's around the corner that I'd have remorse if I went solar today? And so really there's not. The solar technology that we have is pretty static. It's silicon collectors, and what's happening is it's just getting less expensive to build and more energy per square foot. The batteries have made a huge leap, and the ubiquity of electric vehicles is what's driving down the cost of batteries. Mm-hmm. And so that's why batteries are coming back into play. And then it's just small little improvements in efficiency and cost reduction, mostly through economics of scale, larger and larger factories churning out the inverters and the components, larger and larger organizations with, you know, one overpaid CEO, you know.
And that would be which of the two of you?
We're small business, so we're underpaid for sure in a lot of ways. We've not taken paychecks several times just to keep things going. Mm-hmm. But, the big factories where the modules are made are pretty amazing, where they have a glass factory across the street with a conveyor belt to the solar factory, where they don't even have to put things in a truck and ship them. It's more and more efficiency, more and more economies of scale to get to the point where we can have a majority clean energy powered world.
We do see some innovations coming on in the form of microgrids. So that we have a couple projects coming up where we're working on a microgrid. So that's basically an isolated grid. So we had off-grid in the early days, then we had grid connected. In some ways, we're getting back to how can we pull islands of place off-grid again. And some of that is in protection for natural disasters.
Yeah, resilience is the term these days.
And these microgrids are then ultimately connected to the big grid,
yep,
but only through an over-under kind of connection.
Yeah. And if you think about, I know that when Superstorm Sandy hit the Northeast, there was one community that had a microgrid set up, and they were the only one for miles and miles and miles around that had power.
Yeah. People had generators, and the generators were great, except for the ones that didn't start. And then they realized
they couldn't get gasoline.
Yeah, the fuel supply chain was a limit during big events. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, the military has been a real big leader in clean energy, and that's one of the reasons was their mission was hardening the infrastructure. And so should a terrible thing happen, well, the bases will be a lot of the bases have microgrids, a lot of the bases have significant solar. So that's, you know, hopefully we'll all benefit from some of the technological developments from just like the space program.
Okay, great. Well, we want to thank both of you, not only for your 20 years of innovation and being a leader here in the backwaters of southeastern Ohio. You know, we're the first there, and we'll be the last to fully implement it, I'm sure. You've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. I want to thank Michelle and Jeff Greenfield from Third Sun Solar. And we also want to thank our Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. And thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and Jay, eat your veggies this week.
In the sun. Till next time.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com. Yeah!